I'm Tom Gentry, and this is Men Who Talk. It's brought to you by Begin Again Institute, a two-week intensive program for men with intimacy disorders in Boulder, Colorado, where my friend and co-host Ed Tilton is the chief operations officer. Ed and I wanted to have a series of conversations on some of the barriers we see that prevent men from living more authentic lives. We want to underscore the fact that healthy men do talk. We want to help men who often do struggle with intimacy be more true to themselves. And we want to help people who love men maybe understand them a little bit better. So please listen in, subscribe to the show, share this conversation with someone you love, and enjoy Men Who Talk.
We're talking about why men have no friends this week, right?
That's right. That's right. So I'm Tom Gentry, and this is Men Who Talk, a series of 8 episodes where my friend Ed Tilton and I here are talking about men and intimacy and the different aspects of that, concerns around that. And I'll let Ed introduce himself, but a while back, I did an episode for my sort of main podcast, which is called The Path to Authenticity, where because Ed connected us, I interviewed this author named Cleo Stiller, who's a journalist. And she wrote a book called Modern Manhood, where she wrote about all the different facets of a man's life. And it was reporting. She interviewed a bunch of guys to talk to them about different areas of their lives. And one of the common themes that came up for her with friendships is that in adult life, most of the men she talked to had few friendships with any real level of intimacy. The friendships that did exist were relatively superficial. Mm-hmm. And one of the things she said in that episode is that even in my family, we always joked, "Dad has no friends," because, you know, the only person he was intimate with was his wife. And when I say intimate, I mean, you know, the definition of intimacy that we've been going with and talking about, which is connecting with each other on an emotional level. The only person her dad did that with was her mom. And I know my mom and dad, I don't even think my dad really was that emotionally intimate with my mom. Mm-hmm. I think that relationship was probably the closest thing he had to real intimacy, but he was pretty aloof. And, you know, there are reasons for that, which we can get into later, but it's a pretty common theme in men's lives, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I have some theories about how this happens. You know, and I think that part of it is, it's related to how men model emotional connection to other men when we're little. Hmm. I think that there's an unfavorable legacy that we've inherited, but we have the opportunity to change as it relates to the men that were products of conflict and war. Hmm. I had a friend who his dad had passed, but his dad was in World War II. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, his dad would literally only say like 3 or 4 words to him at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, "I'm good. Ask your mother. Time for dinner." Mm-hmm. But not even like "how are you" kind of interactions. You know, and as many of us do, you know, we grow up and we have a different perspective you know, with his dad, but he got to a place where he could say, you know, my dad gave me only what he had to give, you know, but unfortunately, like my dad didn't have the ability to, you know, to be emotionally intimate. And he had the insight to see how that impacted him later. You know, in terms of being able to hold space for discomfort and also connection, you know, with other men, you know, cause he was the guy that he would go somewhere, but only if you invited him, you know, it was like, you like had to call him up and be like, "Hey, Luke, like we're going to dinner. Do you want to come?" But you know, it was like the phone only rang one way. So, you know, I think that, and I think that, you know, we have an opportunity to change this with each generation, but it takes an acknowledgement of what I believe the reality is like what we have now isn't good enough.
Say more about that.
You know, I think that there are men, by evidence of this podcast that we're doing, that are open to having a deepening awareness in terms of relationships and how intimate relationships and connections really make life that much more vibrant. It makes connections stronger. It makes successes better. It makes, you know, sorrow more manageable. I mean, it's kind of the, you know, the human experience is not designed to be experienced in isolation. That's my belief. But then I think that we're still battling, maybe not battling, but we're still experiencing, things that are toxic. And like we talked about in the last segments of, you know, toxic masculinity. And I kind of look at, you know, this recent experience with Will Smith and, you know, Chris Rock as like an example of that, you know, of like, and again, this is just my two cents of, I think it's really sad to see something like that happen in public and people, you know, the comments around that being more of, you know, now the Oscars are finally worth watching.
So for the listener who isn't aware of what you're talking about, explain.
So the Oscars were being held and Chris Rock was making, you know, I mean, essentially Chris Rock was doing his job. You know, as I see it, like Chris Rock is he's a comedian, he's an entertainer. You know, his job is essentially to entertain and kind of poke fun at, historically, to kind of poke fun at some of the guests. And he made a comment about Will Smith's wife that, you know, was not necessarily, you know, I didn't find it to be funny or humorous or, you know, and it probably would be categorized as a poor job. You know, if the job is to entertain, I would say that was not the best way to entertain. But Will Smith proceeded to get out of his chair, walk up on stage, and assault Chris Rock in front of millions of, you know, in front of national television. And, you know, then when Chris Rock worked to do what I believe was his job, or the best that he could at that particular moment of like moving on and making light of it, you know, Will Smith continued to haggle and say, you know, keep my wife's name out of your mouth.
From the crowd.
Yeah. You know, which, you know, there was assault and then there was verbal threats. You know, and again, circumstances are, you know, what they are. I just thought that it was, when we're talking about, hey, we've come a long ways because that there is emotional intelligence, you know, that's being discussed in communities for men. And there is a deepening of connection as it relates to certain men. But I also feel as though there's this other piece to the puzzle, which is, this is kind of why this is still a highlight of how far we still have to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that people are celebrating that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what I believe about that is that one of the behaviors that people who have survived abuse demonstrate is satisfaction when they see someone else abuse the way that they were.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say abuse, I don't mean necessarily the magnitude of abuse that would lead to an arrest or something like that, but you know, it took me working through a lot of my own stuff to get to the point in life where I just couldn't see a reason to hit my kid, whether I was hit or not. You know, I just don't believe that's right. Why?
Right.
To strike another human being, let alone someone you love, and to explain that as an act of love is just, it's kind of ridiculous. But it, I guess it just, all of this speaks to the sort of status quo of toxicity that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would be great if most guys in that situation could be in Will Smith's shoes, could walk up to the guy and say, dude, that wasn't cool.
Yeah.
You know, or why'd you have to do that? Or whatever it is, to actually communicate. But in order to be able to do that, you have to be emotionally grounded and not reactive. And when you don't deal with your emotions, you're reactive.
Right.
So then how do we tie this back into men and friendships, you think?
Well, I think that the men in friendships piece, I mean, this is my take on it, which is that men are left with an emotional deficit just with the culture that we live in terms of, you know, some of the topics that we've talked about with emotional literacy and also just an understanding of how you should behave in a relationship. And I think that, you know, by and large, that this problem becomes incubated over time because it's something that's not discussed, while pseudo friendships or while surface friendships can grow. And so what I mean by that is, you know, and this is my experience, but I think it's not universal, but pretty general in terms of when you go to school, you're encouraged to play with the boys in your class.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the boys in your class, you know, they typically do a couple of things, but it's all common interest related, you know. And I remember for me, it was like, you know, I had a small class of like 16 kids and like 8 boys. And so like those were your friends. And, you know, you kind of grow up with these guys. But again, like nobody's really talking to you about, or nobody was talking to me in terms about like, you know, what it means to share or to be vulnerable or to trust other other, you know, young boys outside of like, I trust that you're going to kick a home run in kickball, or I trust that you're going to like score a touchdown, or that you're going to, you know, I trust that Levi Blair's going to be all-time QB. Like, these are the things that I learned how to trust. But as we grow up, the skills that are required to have deep emotional connection aren't taught. And as we grow up, those opportunities are dispersed, and they eventually they just go away.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is encouraging, nobody's creating environments where you can connect. And so the circumstances of like, you have limited skills to develop deep and meaningful connections. How are you going to create deep and meaningful connections? So you've graduated high school. Maybe you go off to college. Maybe you don't. But, you know, the only deep and meaningful connections that you're really kind of socialized to engage in is dating.
Hmm.
And so I believe that most men, as they transition to a perspective of like, how do I create a deep and meaningful connection, is then overshadowed by this, the only model that we have, which is dating. And so guys say like, man, it'd be really awkward to like date, and like how am I supposed to ask a guy to hang out outside of like sports or, you know, drinking culture or, you know, surface level things.
Mm-hmm.
And so if all we're left with is surface level solutions to the relationship, you know, to the relationship void, it just continues to perpetuate the cycle that we double down with our primary relationship or our partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we inappropriately attribute roles that they don't sign up for, but we hold them accountable to.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, toxicity in that relationship grows pretty quickly. What's your thoughts?
Well, you know, and then when the marriage falls apart, then guys, you know, go hang out with their friends and do either chase women or a bunch of drinking or whatever. It's, yeah. And one of the things that comes up for me is you mentioned dating, but the one way I think, that this comes up with men where they do at least make plans together, share time together, is either sporting events or hunting or fishing or something like that, golf, or attending a sporting event. And I think, I know for me, golf has been very nourishing. Not even that I love golf that much, but that the people who I've played with, the pace of it and everything, it lends itself to intimacy. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in a cart with someone for 3 hours.
Right.
There's time to talk. It's quiet. You know, there's, but so I do think men to some degree get those needs satisfied at times, or they might be, but they're not aware of it. They're not doing it with intention if they are. They just want to go golf.
Well, and to your point, I think that some of these surface level activities, if we want to keep with that same premise, these surface level activities can really be a bonding agent if the skills for relationship are also developed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you understand, if you're willing to, you know, to trust and to be open and receive help from other men, 18 holes of golf could change your outlook on your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I've also known guys that, you know, that I've worked with in a therapeutic manner where, you know, I've said, hey, you know, what do your buddies say about, you know, you getting a divorce or, you know, the fact that like you're going through this with your kids, you know, if it's addiction, if it's, you know, troubled behaviors and, you know, what I would just call life. And a lot of guys that I talk to just say, you know, it just never came up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is code for like, I didn't feel safe.
Right.
And I think that to your point, or just, you know, with the golf piece particularly, you know, I used to work with a grant years and years ago, and it was related to helping male gang members become better fathers. You know, and one of the things that was far and away the best activity to do with these guys was not talk therapy. It was not, you know, sitting across the table from one another to get to know each other. It was using these superficial activities, or, you know, these surface activities, as bonding agents mm-hmm. to deeper connection, you know? And so what I would try to do is we would go shoot hoops where I'm not looking at them eye to eye. So I'm not challenging them in a way that they're worried that I might see that they start to cry, or that they might worry that, you know, that I'm passing judgment on them.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd start to talk about worries and fears. And for them, it was a real survival piece. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, I have a kid now and I'm in a violent culture. How do I get out of the violent culture?
Right.
You know, and so I think that in order to change a man's ability to have friends as an adult, it starts when we're little, and it starts with modeling. You know, if you've got a nephew or if you've got a son, it starts with modeling that emotional connection and vulnerability.
Well, and this experiential thing is important too.
Right.
Because it really does break the ice. And if you have trouble talking about your emotional experience, it is going to be easier to talk to Ed when you're dribbling around and, you know, shooting, you know, you're not mm-hmm. eye to eye. It just softens it a little bit. Right. And, I remember when my son was really young, he was going through something, and I mean, really young, I'm thinking like 3, 4, 5 in that range. And, you know, a friend of mine, a mentor of mine who's a dad, and I would talk to about this stuff. One of the things he said is, you know, get down with him to his level and play with Legos with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced that with your son. I mean, that works like mm-hmm. a charm. It really does. You know, where if you're just asking him, you know, how do you feel about school? You know, how's the teacher been treating you? You know, they're not going to say anything.
Right.
But if you just do something with them
mm-hmm.
and have a conversation, things come out.
Right.
Naturally. And so I think a couple things about this aspect of friendship is that, you know, doing those experiential things with other guys with intention, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, Ed and I are going to go play golf because we need time together. And that's a satisfying way for us to connect. But also to recognize, and within our, you know, core support system, be it significant other, whatever, there needs to be a recognition that that's important. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not just playing golf to get away or right. to not be with you or whatever. I'm playing golf because, one, I enjoy it, and it gives me an opportunity to connect with other men and satisfy a need.
Right.
You know? Now, if you're slamming beers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other part of this is, you know, if you're altering your consciousness, then it sort of takes away any emotional value that was inherent in the event, right?
For sure.
You're erasing it because you're not being you.
Right.
I mean, you know, a beer is a beer, you know, but I mean, if you're really like tossing them back, you know, if that's the point of it, then yeah, that's different.
Well, and I think that I think you're hitting on something that's important to be said, which is just, you know, intention matters and awareness to what you're engaging in also matters. You know, if the intention is to go and connect with somebody, then you can't use an agent of disconnection, you know, to access, to then have a healthy relationship, mm-hmm. you know.
Agent of disconnection. Man, you're like on fire today. Some of the words you're using, terms you're throwing around.
Thank you.
Agent of disconnection. It is. That's what it is. It's a great way to express it.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where I've had a, you know, in my journey, you know, when people would kind of ask me, like, is it okay if is it okay if we drink around you? And I'd say, yeah, that's fine. You know, I will excuse myself if it's really kind of past one, you know, cause like you said, a beer is a beer, but if you're 4 or 5 in, and you're starting to hug me,
right?
Tell me you love me. I'm probably gonna leave, right, you know.
Right.
And that's just because like there's no real connection going on,
right?
And I think that those are key pieces when we start to talk about a topic that we discussed recently, which was, you know, these rites of passage. You know, a lot of the rites of passages that we hold as men often, you know, center around abusive tendencies or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so either it's you're getting into a club and there's a hazing ritual, or that there's some kind of, you know, you're getting into a club or you're getting into a sport. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, being in football and soccer and those types of sports. And it was always like, well, the seniors just haze the freshmen. That's just what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I also remember, you know, joining a fraternity and all of the, you know, the cultural thumbs up that, you know, that the community gives that are really not great at developing friendships.
Well, there's something you're touching on that I think is important, and that is the need for like ceremony and ritual.
Yeah.
Because that is real too. And, we need to create healthy ones for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, one of the things I did for a period of time in my life when something significant in our lives took place with my son and I is, and I did this on my own a lot too, go walk the labyrinth.
Mm.
And I would take him, you know, when big stuff is going on.
Yeah.
Usually did it around Christmas time. I did it when my divorce was final. I took him there and, you know, and just recognized, you know, our lives are going to be different now.
Mm-hmm.
Our lives are going to be different now. And just honor it, you know? Yeah, but what we tend to have, you're right, in our, at least in American culture, is hazing. And I know for me, turning 21 is one of those sort of half-assed rites of passage that we do in our, it wasn't too crazy for me. I wasn't too bad, but my brother, who, you know, was like, I don't know, one of a handful of moments in my life where he's actually nice to me, you know?
Yeah.
And he got way out of hand. You know, but a lot of them are really unhealthy. And the one thing I would like us to touch on is this idea of making plans, and
yeah,
that men have difficulty doing that, because I know, I mean, you know, when I think about doing it, I don't have difficulty doing it, but I'm also the not the guy who goes making plans usually.
Right.
Usually. I guess I am a little bit more around family and stuff, but you know, I can just kind of coast through life without ever doing any of that. Or if I do, I'll do it at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
I don't plan ahead. I don't probably go through the motions of making it happen in the most healthy and productive way. So, you know, and I'm a guy who is relatively, you know, well balanced, I think, you know, but
yeah.
And I think it's just that the only time that happened in my world as a kid was on holidays, and it was my mom doing all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the women telling the men, okay, so we're having Thanksgiving at this place, or what, you know what I mean? It was,
yeah,
the guys were just showing up. They were never, or maybe decorating the tree early on, and you know, but there were things they did. But for the most part, the women did all those things, and the guys just showed up. Tell me where to go.
Yeah, and I think that that's not so uncommon. I mean, I don't think that that's so different than how we're socialized as young boys of like, this is your first grade class, these are your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where we're going to Thanksgiving, and we need you to set up the tree.
Mm-hmm. What's it feel like to you when you have a new friendship with a male and he asks you to hang out? Does it feel a little weird?
It does.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. And there's always like, and I think, and now I'll speak for myself of like, you know, I do seek like meaningful connections. You know, I do like to, you know, I do like to have an inner circle or a tribe, so to speak. And there's always that like anxious energy, at least that I've experienced. So I do use golf or an activity as a way to kind of break through some of the awkwardness. I always experience a lot of anxiety at the end of the time hanging out with the guy, Because there's always this piece where you're just like, we should do this again. And I think that that's one of the things that I know I always have to get better at, this of like, not just saying it, but then setting something up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hey, I actually, like, you're a cool guy, I'm a cool guy, we should hang out, and not having that be the placeholder for conversation.
Say that again now. And not.
And having, not having the phrase, we should hang out again, as just being a placeholder to end a conversation. Mm. You know, like, hey, this was fun, we should do this again. Yep, yep, yep. You know, and I think that there's like, there's three things, you know, when it comes to like really developing, you know, any relationship, but for guys, I think it's also important to kind of hone in for us, which is, you know, set, you know, what I would say is like setting, scene, and sincerity. You know, so like you have to set something up, like setting the time and being intentional about it, you know, allowing a scene in terms of like creating a space where, you know, other people could interact or be social, you know, and who do you want to be part of this experience? But then also the having a certain level of sincerity, you know, for the connection.
I want to spend this time with you because I care about you, because you're important to me.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, so. But to your point, I mean, I've been trying to make friends my whole life. And meaningful connections is the newest iteration to that, you know, to that journey. And it's okay to be anxious or nervous in new relationships.
Well, and I've mentioned to you many times how good you are at this and how much I appreciate it. You know, because you'll say, whether it's via text or whatever, let's catch up. Let's set up a time to talk. We need to connect. And that's why we've been able to develop a meaningful friendship.
Right.
Because it's somewhere in your pecking order and in my pecking order of things in life, it is prioritized.
Right.
That we connect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but there is this weird sort of anxious feeling whenever I experience, you described experiencing it, when one guy is trying to make plans with another guy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Or, you know, what I'm really good at is the words of affirmation thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things one of my mentors, I heard him say once, is when it comes to love, if you don't show it, it doesn't count.
Yeah.
And
that is true.
It is true. It is true. And I grew up in a family where we always said, I love you. And, you know, no matter who it was, a brother, sister, cousin, you know, male, female, didn't matter. And the people, I've never had a problem telling a guy I love him.
Right.
You know, I mean, unless I don't. Right.
Right.
Going back to the sincerity thing. But right. Yeah, it's and I think it must just be because of the nature of our society and the way we're acculturated as men, just the, you know, like deep down there's just this core belief that we're not supposed to make plans with men, we're supposed to make plans with women.
Right.
And so it's just a little uncomfortable.
Right. No, it is. And I can say, like, part of why I've seen such an intention with, like, reaching out to people that I care about is getting honest with my mental health and just saying, if I don't have meaningful connections, I get depressed. You know, and all the things that we talk about in here, I try to do out there, out in my life. You know, I try to spend time with, you know, I try to spend time with my kids as much as possible. I try to be emotionally available to my wife. I try to make sure that I'm not, you know, overburdening her with, you know, ancillary relationships or, you know, putting her in roles that she doesn't deserve. But I also know that if I'm not connecting outside of those, that I'll slip into depression. And that goes to the other piece for me, is that I believe a lot of men live in a state of covert depression, which is really hard to maintain friendships if you're depressed.
Yeah. You don't have the energy.
And if you don't have the energy to have meaningful connections and friendships, and you don't have, and nobody's modeled the skills to actually, like, follow through on deepening those connections, that can be a pretty hopeless place to be.
Yeah. And it just all, you know, snowballs, right? It all fits together. So what do you think about bringing people up on stage?
I think Megan has got something she wants to say. I think we should do it.
I think Megan does. I think Ezra does too. So come on up, you guys. This is another awkward thing.
Right.
Hey, Megan.
We'd like to be a friend.
It's only awkward if we assign awkwardness to it.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yes. Hi, guys.
It's like I want them to come up on stage. I want them to want to come up on stage. Are they gonna? Yeah, but if they don't want to, I don't want to be pushy and, you know, all that neurotic BS. How you doing, Megan? What do you think about all this?
Really refreshing just to hear the conversation and kind of how Ed was walking through his intentionality with his relationships, and definitely resonates. I think kind of what resonated with you were saying, like, a lot of just people in general, I think, functioning or navigating with depression or numbing or, you know, our mental health. I think we kind of have been in a society for so long that has kind of taught us to not feel. And sometimes you don't even have time to feel so that you can kind of get everything that you need to get done in life. So I think it was important how you were expressing and knowing that, checking in with yourself and knowing that if you don't have certain things, whether it's, you know, like you had mentioned, Ed was like, intentional relationships that you can have an outlet with, or if it's being physical, you know, things like that. And so that has something I've really, really been working on this week, is just ramping up my counseling sessions and getting myself grounded and getting myself supported. So that way I can really go out and enjoy and, you know, be present with others and, you know, to have good relationships. I realize it really does start, you know, with myself. So that's kind of what I wanted to bring to the table, and it's good to see you guys.
Good to see you. And you made a really important point, which may even be a topic that we want to take on for one of these weeks. And that is taking time to feel. Mm-hmm. And especially the way our society is sort of organized now, where if it's a two-parent household, both have to work to make ends meet. A lot of times there's a commute. Like, there's not time. We're so busy surviving that we don't have time to think, have time to feel adequate time. And in order to have an emotional experience, we have to be willing to invest the time in it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if we did a topic, if we did a topic on that, I think it almost sound for men, it would be, you know, you can't fix feelings, you know, and kind of this, as men, I think we feel things and then we just want to like fix it. We just want to stuff it away.
Yeah. Yeah. But and it, even if our partners come to us with feelings, we treat it as a problem to solve.
I heard today someone, because I've been so stuck in my head for the last week, and I realized how hard it can be on our bodies. It's just draining. And so a gentleman actually said, like, life is meant to be experienced, not figured out.
Right.
And so, yeah, that kind of resonated today, because like you're saying, there's a time to actually feel it, experience the emotions, move them. And especially, I don't think anyone gets taught to do that. So that's a really beautiful point, Ed. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for coming up.
Ezra?
Good talk, man. All the talks that I've heard and been able to hear and listen to, the whole, they've all been amazing. So thanks, man, for being here. And, you know, Tom knows I love talking about men and, and, you know, the dynamic, especially the dynamic in relationships between men. I really really hit hard when I heard you guys comparing, you know, talking about men and then them not having friendships, and not intimate friendships, especially because intimacy is tied to sexuality, and it would be more like dating than it would be, mm-hmm. than it would be at actual, you know, bonding in a friendship. And I just thought that was so, so deep. It made me think more about that right away. I got kind of went off into a little different place for a minute, because that took me down several rabbit holes. One being, you know, there are times, so for instance, for me, my part of my story is that when I was 6 years old, I was molested, but it was by a female, right? But, yeah. You know, we know that trauma can have, you know, all kinds of consequences to the victim. And it could have been that what happened in my case was that it sparked the fire for me to be more sexual with other girls. But, you know, if it was a horrifying experience or if it was super traumatic, it could have pushed me in a different direction sexually. And so, you know, with all of those scars and those types of things that happen, you know, why would I ever equate intimacy with something other than sex? And it takes, you know, a real evolution of the mind, and or a real solid man, mentor for a man to bring that, all of that stuff into a healthy place so that we can have intimate relationships with other men without it being tied to all kinds of things that most of us aren't even aware of. And I loved that point so much. It also made me think about the Will Smith thing that, you know, we're all talking about it. I even heard you guys mention it at the beginning. But, I think it was in here. Yeah, it was here. But when I think about his story, I'm not sure if you guys have read his book or know much about it, but he watched his mom being brutally beaten by his father one night so badly. If I remember the story correctly, you know, he broke bones and she may have even been knocked unconscious. And his deepest regret was that he never stepped in to protect his mother, and that he always considered himself to be a coward. And a lot of his story is about, even through adulthood, him showing up what he in a way that he felt was cowardly. And so when you think about the trauma, and he was also beaten and abused, but when you think about the trauma of that, you know, that childhood event, along with a string of other abusive things that happened, and now he's sitting here with the woman that he loves, and you know, in a space of toxic masculinity, you know, driven by sadness and fear, he did something unspeakable. It doesn't mean he's not a good man, because he is. He's a really good man. Will Smith is. But that's the kind of things that, you know, the toxic masculinity and not having, and I'm not saying Will doesn't have healthy male relationships, but I know that in my case, it was all about, you know, just what you said about it being more of a, it seeming more of a feminine thing to do than it being about bonding. And so without that bonding, why wouldn't we have the issues that we have with men and intimacy? You know, it's unheard of. Like I grew up, my father, and the example my father left for me was, and I actually spoke to him about this about 2 weeks ago. He still feels and believes the same way, is that you don't trust anybody. Hmm. You don't trust men especially. And so, you know, I just wanted to get that out of my spirit, because, you know, when you guys mentioned it, it really ran deep. And so, yeah, thanks for allowing me to come up here and ramble on for a little bit. But great talk, man. It feeds my soul now today to listen to men discuss men in a healthy, holistic, and loving way. Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate you. Love you, too.
Thank you. You know, this is actually why Tom and I wanted to start this series. It was just to create a space where, to be honest with you, I mean, my goal was just to create a space where men who maybe didn't necessarily know each other could connect in a deep and meaningful way. Because the premise that, you know, that that Tom and I had when beginning this series was, there's this common phrase of like, men don't talk. And the idea that Tom and I have is that, you know, healthy men do talk. You know, healthy men, you know, or men that are working or striving towards health do communicate. So thank you.
Isaiah, how are you today?
Hi, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for putting me up on stage. This is a topic that I've struggled all my life. You know, I really had difficulty making friends. It's like during school, every school year, I would have a different kind of friend, because I would think that that person would change for that year, and he will have a different kind of friend. He will be even more fond of that person. So I strive back then to have like a different best friend or buddy every year. And that made things even more difficult for me when I started working in the corporate world. But thankfully, I was able to meet some wonderful guys that became my friends. And so that I have someone to hang out with, maybe just have coffee or just have a conversation. And the thing that I'm still struggling is being open and how should I describe it? in terms of letting them in my life more openly, in the sense that, just to give an example, like hugging, I had a, I went into an event and my friend was there, and we haven't seen in quite a few weeks, or maybe a month. Then, and that was crossing over the new year. And he was happy and kind of like joyful when he saw me, and he should kind of like say Isaiah, and he was like, his arms are like wide open, and when he was about to approach me, it's like, okay, it's like I know what's gonna happen. This guy's gonna hug me. I don't know what to do, and I'm just feeling so much anxious, and I just kind of regretted that I wasn't able to return that hug. You know, he hugged me. And I think that those are one of the very few moments where I realized that this person is like happy to have me, to just see me, there. And I wasn't able to return that, favor and response. And I regretted that. And it's still something that I'm struggling until now, until the pandemic started, and it's like the opportunities are kind of slim. And the second thing is, regarding more openness, I'm not comfortable being in another person's house. You know, I even though they're a friend of mine and I've known them for quite some time, even though they have invited me, I would always really refuse to their invitation, and I would just suggest maybe we could meet somewhere else, but not in your house. I'm not really comfortable being in another person's house. Last time I was in another person's house was, I don't know, I think it's 9 years or 10 years ago in my friend's house. But I was really comfortable with him, and we were very close. That's why he's able to do it. But if it's for another person, I don't know if I'm still able to do that, and return this favor. So those are the challenges that I have in terms of friendships. Yeah, thank you.
Well, I just want to applaud. I mean, I want to applaud you for, like, first recognizing that there is something that you want to change in your relationship, you know, and also being able to share it here. Because there's a funny thing when you start to say things out loud, is you get one step closer to doing the things that you want to change.
Absolutely. That was great. Thanks for coming up, Isaiah. And we have Serena.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for coming up.
Thanks. Can I ask, what are you guys talking about?
Ed, you want to reset?
Yeah, I guess the high level is, the high level discussion in the room is why men struggle to have adult friendships. And we've covered a lot in terms of some of the, you know, how we're socialized and how, you know, culture perceives male friendships, and some of the intricacies that exist with intimacy.
Yeah, I see. But the thing is, it's not just for men. Like, it happened for me as well. Like, when you have other priorities, you need to achieve your goals, you need to do different things in your life, you need to work, you need to study, and you don't have time for it to think about these things, your relationship with your friends or your boyfriend or girlfriends. So it will be a little hard. I mean, you try to make different excuses in different situations. But yeah, it is like this.
Yeah, this is a series of discussions that we've been doing on men and intimacy. And, you know, one of the things we've been pretty clear about is that men are not the only ones who struggle in that department. Those are just, that's just our experience. And Ed and I both work with men. And so, but yeah, thanks for coming up. And you make an excellent point. And I don't know, any closing thoughts, Ed, before we wrap this thing up?
There is also a podcast related to these things. Like, it's a diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett. And you can listen it from Spotify or Apple Music. And it's so cool. Like, he has the same problem as well. And he's saying that every time I used to make different excuses because I was busy with my work and these things, and I couldn't think about my relationships and think that how important they are.
I mean, I think that kind of sums it up. You know, the things that are important in our lives, we make time for. You know, and I think that if there's a challenge, a homework, an evaluation to this talk, it's to really kind of take a look at, are there people in our lives that we want to deepen the relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, why not set some time aside to have those conversations, those meetings, or those discussions?
Yeah, and the flip side of that is also true, that when we're in a scenario where there's an imbalance and we recognize that the other person isn't willing to invest time,
mm-hmm.
you know, then that's a pretty clear message, right?
Yeah.
I'm not interested in connecting with you. And, you know, that's a lot of us make excuses for people when it comes to that. I know I have a lot of different times. And, you know, I remember being in a college course one time where the professor mentioned a book, and somebody said, "Oh, well, you know, I don't have time to read anything else." You know, and he said, "People make time to do the things they want to do."
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. It's true. You know? So if we want friendships, we'll do what we need to do to create them, to nurture them. And I guess the layer deeper, and where the intimacy and the connection with self comes in, is even knowing that you desire this, you know? So I think there are a lot of guys out there who are covertly depressed that, you know, they don't even recognize that they're lonely and that they need to connect with other guys, with other people. You know, we're just acculturated not to. So we're halfway through this now. Right? This is four episodes that we've done. So if you guys are interested in listening to the other conversations we've had, Men Who Talk, it's on Apple Podcasts, it's on Spotify, it's on Google Play. It's you can find it at thepathtoauthenticity.com. It's probably by now all over the place on most podcast platforms. So check it out. Follow Ed, and we'll be back next week.
Be a man. Dress for success. Wear the pants in the relationship. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Get the shirt off your back, but don't lose your shirt. Are you really going to wear that shirt? Be a man. Be a ladies' man. Be the man at home. Make a man out of that kid. Sometimes you have to manhandle a situation to show them you're the man. Act like a man. Be the man at the gym. Is that all you can lift? Man up. Whoops. Man down. Be a man. Carry on. Carry your weight. Carry your water. Carry the ball across the goal line. be a man. Take a chance, take a risk, take the job, take the money, don't take more than you give, don't take any crap, be a man. Be the man at your job, work like a man, be successful, hustle. A hardworking man is a happy man. Never send a boy to do a man's job, be a man. Take it seriously, take a joke, never let him see you sweat, drink like a man, smoke like a man, fight like a man, be a man. Tough it out, don't cry, don't complain, don't worry, and don't trust doctors. Diet like a man.